So Reverend Tracy is going to do the reading this morning, and she'll just go right into her sermon from there.
So today, my sermon is on mindfulness. So for the reading this morning, I'm not going to read to you. We are actually going to do a little practice of mindfulness. And we're going to do a hand mindfulness exercise. So this is how we're going to start. I just want you to allow your hands to rest in your lap or your knees, or wherever they feel comfortable and where you can see them. So I want you to bring your attention to your hands and simply notice them. Notice the sensations in your hands. Notice any pain or discomfort. Don't resist those sensations. Just feel them, allowing them to be as they are. Notice if there's any pulsing or tingling in your hands. Can you feel the air passing over the skin? Can you feel cold or warmth? Notice the texture of any surfaces that your hands are touching. Notice the sense of warmth and life force energy radiating through your hands. Rest in awareness of these sensations. Now, holding one hand gently in the palm of the other, look closely at it. Notice the details of it, the coloring, the lines, the fingerprints that are unique just to you. Reflect upon how much your hands have done for you over your entire life. Consider how much love and care has been expressed through your hands over the course of your life. Tell your hands thank you for all they have done for you. The Buddha once asked a student, "How long is a human life?" The student replied, "It is so brief it seems but a single day." And then he asked another student the question, "What is the true length of a person's life?" She answered thoughtfully, "It is the time taken to eat a single meal." And so Buddha asked a third student, "How long is a human life?" "The time that is in a single breath," was the student's reply. "Exactly so," said the Buddha. "You understand." This is a truth that is often shared by mystics, religious teachers, and philosophers. All the life that we have is in this very moment. The past is gone. The future is unknowable. All that exists is now. However, the way most of our minds carry on, it is very clear that they don't have a clue that this is true. Our nattering minds often seem obsessed with the past, particularly those things we did poorly or someone else did poorly. Our mind also obsesses about the future. Anything from planning the next trip to the grocery store or worrying about something you have to fix or dealing with someone or that really wonderful trip we've been wanting to take. Buddha called our chattering minds monkey mind. He said, just as a monkey swings through the trees and grabs one branch and lets go to seize another, so too is what called thought, mind, or consciousness arises and disappears continually, day and night. Our minds talk. That is what they do. Mark Mussay, a seminary professor who teaches meditation, relates the story of a DVD he once tried to play of a film. It started on a special feature which had the film in the background, and then to one side and sort of superimposed over the film were the producer and the director talking about why they made particular decisions in the film. And he found this very interesting for about 5 minutes, and then he wanted to watch the film. But it turned out the DVD was broken, and the only way you could watch the film was with this conversation over the top of it, and which he did not find very interesting. But he discovered that he had the perfect metaphor for the way our minds work. They're chattering over the top all the time, and so you can't really see the life that is happening to you. And you might already be very aware of this tendency in your own mind, but I want us to spend just a moment checking it out. So we're just going to sit, and I don't want you to pay attention to anything in particular. Just sit and pay attention to what your mind does. Okay, stop. What did your mind think about? My mind particularly likes to offer me negative reviews of every past action. And if it's not in such a negative mood, it makes plans and lists and repeats them endlessly as if I didn't write them down already. My mind also really likes to worry about the future. It can spend crazy amounts of time trying to figure out what to do in a particular situation when I don't have enough information remotely to make a plan. Worse, my mind will start reviewing my life's difficult moments. It goes over what would have happened if I'd done this and not that, and if the other person had done that and not this, and if that really matters now. I mean, that is all done with. Monkey mind distracts. And it can be very dangerous. Consider all the times you went to the grocery store and realized you didn't remember driving there. Our monkey mind hijacked us and let a habitual pattern drive us to the store. We just hoped the real us would have shown up if anything unusual occurred. Unfortunately, our mind can behave worse than just monkeying around and distracting us. Buddha also compared our minds to a wild forest elephant. An untamed elephant, when frightened or angry, can do terrible things. In a town in India not long ago, an elephant knocked down shacks and trampled motorcycles. An out-of-control elephant can kill people and animals and damages whatever stands in its way. Our mind, especially when frightened or angry, can also destroy. Something happens and our mind simply reacts. It jumps to conclusions and responds with pre-programmed emotions, thoughts, and actions. Our mind spews out the first thing it thinks or acts on the first idea it has. It unleashes angry, hurtful words and criticism, or it sends us running someplace else. Our minds hijacked us. We cannot see what is really happening right in front of us. We don't think or pause or let the rush of emotion slide through us. We simply react. Buddha taught that we cannot be free of suffering or be enlightened unless we learn to calm our monkey mind and train the wild elephant and be fully, with intention, alive in each and every moment. The ability to do this is called mindfulness. Mindfulness is, according to Jan Chosen Bays, deliberately paying full attention to what is happening around you and within you, in your body, heart, and mind. Mindfulness is awareness without criticism or judgment. The monkey mind and the wild elephant are all about criticism and judgment and enacting habitual patterns. They care more about what they think than what is actually happening. So we're going to try some mindfulness. I want you to take a moment and notice 5 things in this room. It could be something you hear or something you smell or feel. And notice, try to notice each one. And then experience it as you've never heard it, seen it, smelled, or felt any of it. Pass no judgments, make no comparisons, just sense them. Going to pause. Take a moment to consider what you noticed. What I notice when I do this exercise is that it brings me to the here and now very quickly. The monkey mind simply quiets. Mindfulness is an ancient practice. Almost 3,000 years ago, one of the most important Hindu scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita, described the untamed mind and prescribed meditation. This is what the Bhagavad Gita says about the mind. The mind is the friend of those who have control over it. And the mind acts like an enemy for those who do not have control over it. One who has control over the mind is tranquil in heat and cold, in pleasure and pain, in honor and dishonor, and is ever steadfast with the Supreme Self. The Bhagavad Gita then suggests practice to gain control of the mind. The yogi should sit on a firm seat that is neither too high or too low, covered in sacred kusha grass, a deer skin and a cloth, one over the other in a clean spot, sitting and concentrating the mind on a single object, controlling the thoughts and the activities of the senses. Let the yogi practice meditation for self-purification. We have no kusha grass or deer skin here with us today, but let us try this mindfulness exercise as well. So we're just going to take a moment again, and I want you to concentrate on something. It can be an object that you can see or hear or possibly your own breath. As we sit, each time our mind wanders off, as it will, gently bring it back to your object. And don't scold your mind. It can't help it. It just wanders off like a toddler. Instead, let the thought come and go and bring your mind back to the object. So we will sit for about 1 minute. You may come out now. Essential to Hinduism and Buddhism is learning the ability to control your mind so you can always come back to the present moment. However, all faiths offer contemplative practices so their followers that teach can teach them and teach their followers to still and calm and control their minds. Why would that be so? Scientists have been studying the effects of mindfulness for 30 years or so, and I can tell you this. If you could put all the benefits of mindfulness in a bottle and package it and advertise it, people would say it was too good to be true. They would be highly skeptical of your snake oil. According to the research, mindfulness practice reduces stress, decreases anxiety, depression, and emotional reactivity. It makes us happier and increases our sense of well-being. Mindfulness boosts working memory, gives us cognitive flexibility, and strengthens our focus and attention, particularly in older adults and those with ADHD. It grows the brain's gray matter in the areas of memory, attention, and decision-making, and decreases the loss of gray matter as we age. Mindfulness helps people manage chronic pain, improves immune function, lowers blood pressure, and helps prevent, manage, and cure all kinds of illnesses, including heart disease and cancer. It increases the size of the telomeres. Those are the caps at the end of our genes, which reduce cell damage and lengthen our lives. Mindfulness actually decreases the length and intensity of the common cold and improves one's chance of weight loss when dieting. I told you, it is too good to be true. Mindfulness also increases our empathy and our compassion. Part of the mission of this congregation is to grow into compassion. And the simplest and most consistent way to grow in compassion is to be mindful. This is the teaching of Buddhism, but it is also a finding of science. Studies have found that people who practice mindfulness are more empathetic, kind, and willing to help others. Studies of the brains of longtime meditators show strong neural pathways of the brain that controls compassion. Being mindful helps us be happier, healthier, smarter, longer-lived, and more compassionate people. And isn't that every single thing that we want? When we practice mindfulness, we shift our brain from thinking, doing, judging mode to a perceiving, noticing, receiving mode. We ask that part of our mind that makes up stories, judges, acts habitually, and reacts to take a break. We ask that part of our mind that imagines the past and the future and makes us worried and anxious to rest. Playing scenes from the past and worrying about and planning for the future are the most stressful things we do each day. When we re-experience something or worry about the future, our bodies experience all the same emotions and sensations as if those events were happening right this moment. Too much stress is notoriously bad for us. We tense. We get angry, we get anxious, our blood pressure goes up, our immune system weakens. Stress is a causal factor in many illnesses. Additionally, it batters our sense of well-being and happiness and can cause or exacerbate mental illness. Learning to be mindful stills all that angst, reducing stress and its bad effects upon us. Thich Nhat Hanh describes meditating as sitting in his office and breathing. And isn't that lovely? Excuse me, we might say when life is too much, I'm just going to sit over here and breathe a while. One breathing exercise you can do whenever it feels like your monkey mind or wild elephant has taken over is Piko Piko breathing. And this is an ancient Hawaiian practice. I'm telling you, this mindful stuff is everywhere. So I want you to try it. It's one of my favorites. So I want you to breathe in deeply, and as you inhale, place your attention on the crown of your head. So you breathe in, thinking about the crown of your head, and as you exhale, center your attention on your navel. So breathe in, attention on your crown. Exhale, attention on your navel. You're drawing your attention from the crown of your head to your navel, so do this a few times. More importantly, though, mindfulness is good for us because it decreases our emotional reactivity and our automatic responses. One of our greatest gifts as people is creativity, the ability to craft old elements into something new. However, creativity is destroyed when we get caught up in automatic responses. We already know about something, so we don't listen when somebody else talks about it. Emotions rise when our child or parent or spouse uses that tone of voice, and we let the wild elephant run, and we never hear what our loved one wanted us to know. We react before we even know what's going on. When the critical, critiquing, know-it-all voice in your mind is silent, we get a lovely space between what happened and our response. And in that space is the moment where creativity and newness is possible. Oh, but if mindfulness was not so difficult. But difficult it is. Our minds are at best wild teasing monkeys, always scrambling just out of our grasp. And at worst, wild elephants wrecking havoc. And minds do not train easily. It takes time and practice regularly over months and years. Just like having a strong, healthy body requires consistent, regular exercises. There are two common ways to practice the art of mindfulness. One is to meditate. or take time each day to sit and focus on one's breath or mantra or object. As we practice, the mind runs off and it just does its thing, and we notice and without judgment or comment bring our mind back to the focus point. Through daily practice, meditation strengthens our capacity to be mindful. We learn in our regular lives to notice thoughts and judgments, dismiss them, and come back to the present. And in the present, we are more likely to see the real situation, unmarred by our fears, judgments, and preconceived ideas. We get to be creative. This allows calmer, easier, more compassionate journey through life. The other way people practice mindfulness is to do exercises. The meditations and breathing exercises we did today are some examples of those exercises. Or other is to try to be mindful at particular moments in your day. So while you're in the shower, be mindful the whole time. Or doing it when you're eating. And I do this just eating exercise from time to time. And it is both sublime and downright frustrating. I feel at a loss with just me and my food. I want my computer. I want a magazine. I want a conversation. And then my mind scrambles off, and I don't notice the food anyway. Or even though I know I'm doing the food exercise this particular week, I will eat a whole meal before I even remember that that's what I was up to. Still, when I'm really mindful, it is wonderful. Blueberries and mangoes squirt tangy juice into my mouth. I crunch through hazelnuts, which release that intense flavor on the very first bite. One day, I splurge and I eat a croissant, and that delicate white flour and butter simply dissolve on my tongue. I had not realized before how perfectly croissants release the flavor of butter in tiny little charges. So I commend the practice of mindfulness to all of you. As an American, I will tell you, it will make you happier, healthier, smarter, and longer lived. As a minister, I will tell you, it will give you peace and grow your capacity to experience compassion. As a person, though, let me tell you, one bite of croissant mixed with a touch of melted dark chocolate held in your mouth and truly tasted will blow your mind. Enjoy your life. Be mindful.